went from making, you know, D's and F's before to making straight A's. I was surrounded by people who cared about me. They helped me to apply to college, something I didn't even know was possible.
I'm actually a school choice alum. I utilized a scholarship from middle school all the way through high school, and it made all the difference for me.
I firmly believe that the only right choice for a child is the choice that fits that child best.
This is Reality Check, and I'm Jeannie Allen, the CEO and founder of the Center for Education Reform. This week is National School Choice Week, an annual celebration on the progress being made to restore parent power over the lives of children in making choices in how and where their kids are educated. You know, a lot of people don't quite realize that the way education is structured relegates students to go to school by their zip code. I mean, imagine in a society in 2018 where technology and choices and freedom drives just about everything we do, drives our purchasing power, drives where we live, helps us decide and make decisions about how to advance our lives. In this truly global world, we still have students going to school roughly the way they did 180 years ago. So many of my listeners out there are familiar with the concept of school opportunity. And many of us went to great public schools, some to private schools, maybe even some, if you've gone to school since 1993, to charter schools. But the reality is those choices are only available if you happen to be in a state that has a law that allows money to follow your child to the school of choice, like a charter school law, which they have in about 44 states, or a voucher or tax credit program, which we have in about 14 states. But it only really roughly encompasses about 6% of students, school-age students in K-12 nationwide. And it's really mystifying to me why this is the case. So as a result, more and more people every year are coming to the table saying, we want the chance to decide, does our child need a school that is smaller, that's bigger, that's more arts-focused, science-focused? Where are the innovations in personalized learning and technology-driven education? Maybe it's back to basics. And maybe the school we went to and the district we attended and the one where my mother taught or my sister taught, you might be saying, is just fine. But it should be a parent's decision, not the system. I'm so happy to be celebrating this all-important week, particularly because on Capitol Hill and in states and communities, students, teachers, policymakers are getting together to share what it is they believe has to happen to truly make education great for all Americans. I'm talking to Congressman Luke Messer from the state of Indiana. Good morning, Congressman.
Oh, good morning. This is such an exciting day, one of my favorite days of the year when we get to come together and celebrate all the opportunities that come for young people with school choice.
And why did you get involved in school choice?
You know, I grew up in a single-parent family in Greensburg, Indiana. I had a mom that worked at the local factory there, and we're fortunate to have a good local public school. But I always knew when I was a kid that I would have a chance to succeed in this country because we believe we had access to a quality school. I believe this is the civil rights issue of our time. We have to become a nation that fulfills this promise of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, right? That we're all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among them, the opportunity to succeed, right? And in modern life, that starts with a quality education.
That is so true. You know, I wonder if you work with your colleagues across the country, obviously, in the U.S. Congress. I wonder how much more that we have to do to convince all of them.
Yeah.
To get on board for that idea. Are you hopeful about your colleagues and what's happening to help embrace this idea in Washington?
Yeah. I'm hopeful because I believe the American people are way ahead of their elected leaders. The American people understand this is not an unachievable dream. We can be a nation where every child has access to a quality education. We can be. We just have to do it. You know, I'm from Indiana, where we've been very bold in finding the kind of reforms that make that happen. I think more can be done across the country and more here in Washington to take the dollars that we do have and spend them in ways that empower parents. Let's empower parents to make the best choice for their child. I believe when parents have a choice, kids have a chance. That's what today's all about, and we're excited to be here.
Thank you, Congressman Luke Messer.
Oh, it's always great to talk to you.
And
I'm talking to Walter Banks. It is so good to meet you, Walter.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here. Super excited.
And you are here from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, born and raised in Columbus. My dad's from the Cleveland area. My mom's from the Akron area. So kind of familiar with, you know, all of Columbus and all of the area. But yeah, so I'm super excited.
And this is the National School Choice Week kickoff rally in the United States Capitol at the Senate. And so why are you here?
Well, the biggest reason is to give back. I'm actually a school choice alum. I utilized a scholarship from middle school all the way through high school, and it made all the difference for me. It completely changed my life around. I firmly believe that the proper education has the ability to change lives and the ability to break a poverty cycle, especially in African-American families. And so the reason I'm here is because I've been a recipient of it, and it's changed my life. So I figured, you know, it's only right for me to continue to push this and continue to help the millions of other children who were in my position and help pull them to a better education.
Amazing, Walter. And you went to where to school again?
A small school in high school in Columbus was called Tree Life Christian. All the way through sixth grade, all the way through graduation.
Because you had a choice.
Yes, and it was all the difference for me. This school understood my learning style, and it was a smaller school, so they took the time to work on me and see what my learning style was and how I responded accordingly to teachers, to tests, to homework, and things like that. And there were some days where I'd have off days, or I'd be dealing with, you know, a tough loss on the basketball team or something like that. And they said, you know, Walter, let's figure out what's going on with you. I actually had one professor who stayed after school one day and helped me with my jump shot after I lost one of the game-winning shots. And then right after that, we worked on chemistry. And so it was just like he said, I want to see you success in the classroom and on the court.
That's personalized learning right
absolutely.
There, isn't it?
So that's what I needed. I needed someone to say, hey, I'm pulling for you. I'm rooting for you. Let's get it done.
I'm talking with Denisha Merriweather, who's just a rock star, who I first learned about because of your travels through Florida schools and your experiences. And I would love you to just tell me a little bit about what that was all about and what brought you to Washington.
So my story, I grew up in a really low-income area. My family struggled with poverty for about four generations. And so growing up, it was pretty tough. And I failed the third grade twice. My mom, my family, we moved around constantly. At one point, it was in a hotel room. We were living in a hotel room. School was, you know, a nightmare, too. So family life is a nightmare. School life was no better. The teachers didn't really seem to care about me, about the things that I was going through. I tried really hard in school. I missed a lot of days. I was very embarrassed because I was two grades behind, so I would fight all the time.
Well, when you're coming to school with not a lot behind you and in really bad circumstances, that happens.
It was pretty tough. And things started to change when I started to live with my godmother in the sixth grade. And she really wanted to find a better life for me. And she really, you know, she wanted to expose me to faith and put me in a school that she felt would help me to succeed. And there was a school started by my church a few years prior, and it was a private school, and so she had to pay for it, and she didn't know how she was going to pay for it. And a friend told her about a scholarship program, and so she found out, she applied, and I got accepted. I started at Esprit de Corps in sixth grade, and my life completely changed. At first, when I walked in the door, I thought it was a joke, you know, like, I was like, these people can't be so happy. You know, I was very suspicious. You know, these people are, like, lying. It's gonna weigh off, you know.
Right.
First days of school, everybody's cheery and happy, and then, you know, it fades. It didn't fade. They were always very happy and very cheery, very supportive, and it was an adjustment. I adjusted really well. I started making honor roll the first 9 weeks when I got there. I went from making, you know, D's and F's before to making straight A's. I was surrounded by people who cared about me. They helped me to apply to college, something I didn't even know was possible. They helped me to get to college, you know, drove me there. If I needed something for my family, they filled that gap. I knew that they cared about me. And then coming to D.C., I've been sharing my story for a while now, and so it's been such a great privilege and honor to be invited by the Secretary to serve to highlight more student voices at the department.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been great.
So you are here for the National School Choice Rally because why?
I look at the room and I see a bunch of kids sitting down here, and that was me one day. You know, I was sitting here cheering and being so excited about the opportunity that I was given in education. And so it's been so exciting for me to just see more kids take advantage of that and to advocate and to talk and fight for them. So this is really cool.
Well, we are so glad you're fighting, and we need more of you out there. So thank you, Denisha.
Thank you, Jeannie.
I'm talking to Senator Ted Cruz, who, in addition to being a champion of great rights for parents all over the country, here at the National School Choice Rally, was instrumental in making sure that parents had access to 529s, to their own money, to be able to have access to new choices. Senator Cruz, why'd you do that?
Well, good morning. It's great to be with you. You know, last month we had a tremendous victory on 529s, a tremendous victory for school choice, in the middle of the tax bill. After midnight, as we were debating the bill, I introduced an amendment that expands college 529 savings plans. Expands them right now, as you know. 529s are immensely popular. Parents, grandparents use them to save for their kids for college. Well, the amendment I introduced expanded them, so you can still use a 529 for college, but now parents can also use it for K through 12 education, for private school, for public school, for parochial school, for religious school, up to $10,000 per child per year. The legislation went to the wire on the floor of the Senate. It was very, very close. Ultimately, it passed 50-50 with an evenly divided Senate, and the vice president came and broke the tie. It was the only amendment that was passed on the floor of the Senate that added anything to the bill, and it is in the legislation now. President Trump signed it into law. It is the most far-reaching federal school choice legislation that has ever passed, impacting and benefiting up to 50 million school kids all across the country.
It's just fantastic. I wonder why, you know, if you can help us understand, why this is such a controversial thing to give parents the opportunity to drive their own kids' education.
You know, it's crazy, and it shouldn't be. This was on the Senate floor. I was actively whipping the votes, making the case one-on-one to each senator. The problem is, on the Democratic side, they're not interested in the merits. They're not listening to the merits. Indeed, they are simply responding to the leadership from the teachers' unions, and the teachers' unions have opposed virtually every form of choice. And so the Democratic Party is completely silent on the merits. In fact, at the very end, the first version of the amendment I introduced was even broader. It included homeschoolers as well. It included parents of kids with disabilities, that they could pay for therapy out of the 529s, educational therapy for the kids with disabilities. A few days later, the Democrats on the floor of the Senate, they used a parliamentary maneuver to strip homeschoolers and to strip kids with disabilities from the program. And you know, I asked at the time, I said, you know, why would you do this? Why would you vote for such a mean-spirited amendment? And what do you intend to say to a child with disabilities in your state for why you voted to say, no, your parents can't spend their own money in this account on your education? It's cruel. It's mean-spirited. And every single Democrat voted to strip out homeschoolers, voted to strip out the kids with disabilities. We still passed a major victory, but it would have been even broader. And the sad reality is, this is the politics right now. There are not in the Senate, there's not even a single Senate Democrat willing to listen to the merits and stand for kids and expanding choice. That's a really sad state of affairs.
Well, your work and your effort has helped change that, I'm sure, and will continue. Thank you so much for your leadership, Senator Cruz.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled that so many activists and leaders and teachers and parents and kids came together fighting for this major expansion of school choice. This is the civil rights issue of the 21st century, and every day, every year, we are making real and meaningful strides forward.
We all ought to be promoting school choice because parents ought to have a right to where they send their children, and they should have a right to get the best education possible for their children. And sometimes that's the public schools, sometimes it is a parochial school, sometimes it's a charter school. And when parents have choice, as in everything else in our country, competition makes things better. And so I'm I'm a huge believer in choice.
And Dr. Fox, as chairwoman of the Education Workforce Committee in the House, which is just a monumental accomplishment, so congratulations. What can you all do up here, and what should we know as citizens and voters to help support you in your efforts?
Well, we've already passed the Every Student Succeeds Act a couple of years ago, so as it relates to elementary and secondary education, it's really a matter of parents working within the legislation that's out there and with their states to promote the issues that are important to them. You know, the federal government has allowed and promoted school choice in post-secondary education for a long, long time, and yet there seems to be an aversion to it in elementary and secondary, and that's unfortunate.
I'm talking to Congressman Paul Mitchell at the National School Choice Week rally. Good morning, Congressman Mitchell.
It's great to be here. It's good to see a good crowd of young people here wanting to talk about school choice.
And why is that important to you?
It's a personal issue for me. It would have made a difference in my life. I went through a lot of things educationally that, you know, were a struggle because I just didn't fit in a regular educational program. I have a 7-year-old, almost 8-year-old now, that goes to a private school because he has some learning disabilities. I couldn't do that in a public, traditional public school. My 15, almost 16-year-old stepdaughter, she goes to a virtual school now. Individual choice, it fits children to different needs, and we need to have those choices available for all kids and not make that some optional thing. So for me, I think that choice is critically important, and we need to support that for the federal government.
And you could have chosen any big issue to connect yourself to when you ran and won Congress, but you chose education.
I spent 35 years in education, mostly adult education with skills. I've seen the importance of education. I grew up poor, the oldest of 7, and without education, without getting some opportunity, I would not be here in Congress. So I think education is one of the keys we have in this country, that we can help young people get ahead. I heard it said that opportunity is not equal. We need to try to equalize that. You know, skills throughout and capabilities are throughout our young people. We need to make sure that you have as much opportunity as possible for all of them to lead our country.
Thank you, Congressman Mitchell from Michigan.
Good to see you.
Good morning, Secretary Betsy DeVos, U.S. Department of Education. It's so good to see you here at the National School Choice Week rally.
Great to see you, Jeannie.
You just gave a phenomenal speech about the importance of everyone's opportunity to pick the school that best fits their child. What brought you to this?
Well, it started 30-some years ago when my oldest child was starting school, and I realized that many other children didn't have the same opportunity that I did with my children to choose the right school for them. So I've been fighting on behalf of the kids that haven't had that choice for many, many years.
And you spoke recently, and you speak frequently about how you speak to parents and teachers. This is like a no-brainer for them, right? So what do you attribute the fact that people love it, but then in Washington it's such a hard fight?
Well, we've seen a lot of attempts to try to solve problems from a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach. It hasn't worked. We need to try something different, drastically different, and we need to free up and empower parents to make the choices for their kids. This is a logical thing. It is really imperative for the future of our country's health and well-being that we do this, and we need people to come together and decide that we're just going to do it.
Johnny Taylor is probably most well known as the immediate past president and CEO of the Thurgood Marshall Fund, which provides scholarships to students who attend historically black colleges and universities, otherwise called HBCUs. Johnny Taylor, you are a phenomenal leader. You have been out there fighting for the opportunity for students across what you term, which I think is beautiful, fragile communities. As leader of the Thurgood Marshall College Fund and now a board member, as a business leader. You travel around the country, talk to people, and in November, you were profiled in the Wall Street Journal in an article entitled Why Black Colleges Need Charter Schools. So clearly, you're passionate about this issue. Talk to us about why it's so important that kids have choices.
One doesn't have to look far in our community to realize that things are going to have to change if we're going to change the trajectory of fragile communities. And by the way, fragile communities are black communities. They're made up of white people in white communities. They're made up of Latinos and Hispanics or Hispanic communities. So it's not, they're not race-based. They are speaking to communities where children are not being given the opportunities in their secondary education, PK through 12, mm-hmm. that give them the ability to compete in, as what we know is a highly competitive global economy. And so what happens is we focus too often on, you know, high incarceration rates. We focus on the lack of entrepreneurship occurring in those communities. And what we fail to acknowledge is that those are byproducts. Incarceration rates and low entrepreneurship and high unemployment, those are byproducts of a broken, a failed public school system, traditional public school system.
So why and then, so Johnny, let me just ask you then, why did the NAACP, which you talk about in one of your op-eds, come out and call for a moratorium on something like charter schools, which aren't they serving largely students who have fallen through the cracks?
Listen, there's no other way than to be direct. That was clearly the product of their relationships with the unions, the teachers' unions in particular. They are major funders and supporters of the NAACP, and many of the NAACP members are members of the teachers' unions. And so through that relationship, the mutuality of interest, if you will, they decided that charter schools broadly were bad and that we should have a moratorium on all charter schools, totally failing to give any sort of recognition to the fact that many traditional public schools, in fact, in some systems, the entire county of public school systems are harming our communities. So it was fascinating to me, I have to say, and it's what prompted me to want to write that piece, is why are we talking about criminal justice and incarceration rates and recidivism, and why are we talking about unemployment without talking about how we got to this?
Right. And, you know, I wonder what you think of this. I've had Howard Fuller from Milwaukee and, of course, a national activist on the podcast before, and I was with Howard recently, and he was in a group of people, and he was saying, you know, it's kind of interesting that people talk about, you know, all of a sudden everyone wants to talk about integration, like we're going to send your kids somewhere else, we're going to send other kids to you, as if that's solving the problems. It sounds controversial, right? We're actually not supposed to be saying things like that.
Well, I don't know what's so controversial. Ultimately, yeah, I'm a lawyer by training, as you know, and when you look at, you know, the courts and how they handle child domestic cases, it's ultimately the standard should be what's in the best interest of the children. And the best interest of the child is the standard we use. And frankly, I think we would do well to use that as the standard in deciding what the conversation should be, what the standard should be when it comes to K through 12 education. Tax dollars should be used in such a way as to maximize these children's opportunity. If it happens to be that the neighborhood the school that the student attends is not performing and that there is the opportunity for that kid to go to a charter, public charter school or otherwise, and get a better educational opportunity, then that's the discussion we should have. Getting these other things to me are red herrings. Mm-hmm. They're intended to take the conversation off into something that's hard to argue. You know, who you know, we'd like to say diversity is good. And so as a result of saying that, then the argument is, well, if these schools are majority, if not totally black, then they are therefore bad. And I disagree. Frankly, HBCUs, many of our HBCUs are, if not 100% black, they are supermajority black. And to suggest that they are somehow not good institutions because of their racial makeup, undermines and frankly takes a real shot at the legacy of institutions that have done a wonderful job of educating the black professional and middle class.
That's a really interesting point. And of course, you know, you've noticed and pointed out before how even the competition from, say, charter schools in District of Columbia have improved traditional public schools.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a rising tide floats all boats. Sometimes that competition is good. I mean, frankly, when we were looking at just traditional public schools in D.C. only, and the teachers all had their guaranteed continuing contracts or tenure, and the schools had their budget, and because of rising real estate values in D.C., there was more money to throw after it. There was no incentive to actually make these schools accountable to these children. What I'm really excited about is when this community decided to embrace charter schools All of a sudden, you saw, frankly, some really good, some poorly performing, historically poorly performing traditional public schools step up their game because they were actually losing talent. They were losing students. And so if that is another benefit to, I think, I'm not going to say if, it is a major benefit to bringing that level of competition in the market from the charter school movement.
So it's really interesting. You know, this is National School Choice Week. You are so lovely to spend some time with me on the podcast, Reality Check, for those just
glad
joining me. I'm with Johnny Taylor, one of the just titular heads of the cause for freedom and opportunity for all people, and works so hard on behalf of historically black colleges and universities. Let me just kind of help us end with one more question for you. So you've
Please.
Talked about how you don't like the term school choice.
Can right.
Why is that?
Well, so if we go back, for those of us who've been following this for a while, in the earliest versions of some charter schools, the schools chose, the argument was they would select the students, the highest performing, best behaving kids from the right neighborhoods to come to charter schools. And so what they were essentially doing was leaving the other less desirable children in the public schools and saying, you go sort that, siphoning the cream off of the top. And so essentially the schools were choosing their students. Well, fast forward, that hasn't happened for a very long time, and that's not the way it operates anymore, but that has continued to be a theme, an understanding, a narrative in many of our communities, particularly in the black community. That is that, you know, somehow the schools are choosing. The real sell here, the opportunity to get our parents engaged, is to say, you're making this choice. This is about a parent's choice to make the best opportunity, educational opportunities for their children. I'm personally a product of that. I grew up, and you may have read about it, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Mm-hmm. My mother, single mother, and she decided that our neighborhood schools were not good enough. But as a single mother, educated, a nurse, with three children, she couldn't afford private school tuition. We didn't have private school vouchers, which is a whole other thing that I wish we'd discuss more at length at time. But we didn't have those options. So she participated in a magnet program, you know, the precursors to the charter school movement
right.
that we know it to be, right?
Yeah.
But she chose to take her children out of school. We had to be bused some almost an hour away each way every day to get a higher quality education. And as a result of that, all of my sisters, the three of us, I have two sisters and I, are successful graduate degrees, no trouble, great lives, et cetera. And I owe it all to that movement that is now called the Charter Movement, but was then the Magnet Movement. And it was the parent, my mother, being able to make that choice and her not being limited by the zip code that we lived in or, you know, how many zeros there were on her W-2.
Right. And, you know, imagine if in America, everyone had that same freedom and didn't have to fight for access to their tax dollars to choose that school that's best for their child. How many problems would go away, Johnny? How many?
I mean, that's, as I started this comment, we wouldn't have, to the level that we do, the criminal justice problems, the recidivism problems, the unemployment problems, the lack of entrepreneurship problems in all of these fragile communities if parents could take charge of their children's education without regard to the zip code that those children have to reside in. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. And Jeannie, I got to thank you for your passion around this. It's amazing to me that the very communities who will benefit most from educational opportunity and freedom, I love that word, and freedom, which is sort of an American word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why people would argue against parents being given the freedom to make good choices for their children. So this is like a religion to me. It is something that we have to do. I'm fortunate as a result of the decisions that my mother made because of the choices that were available to her 40 years ago, I'm now able to provide for my kid and put her in the right schools. And I'm pleased to tell you that my daughter is in Washington, D.C., in a public charter school, Washington U Ying, which is a Mandarin immersion program. I'm a significant taxpayer because I own property in Washington, D.C. I live in Washington, D.C. But the fact that my child is able to go to a racially diverse school, school with a very special offering, Mandarin Education Immersive, not just a course, but Mandarin Immersive Education, is something that I think speaks volumes about what charters done right, what it looks like, and what the results can be.
Fantastic. The story, Johnny, your story, what you're able to do for your daughter today, what you're able to do for students across the country, it provides a great hopeful sign for 2018.
Thank you. Be well.
So I'm Jeannie Allen. I'm CEO of the Center for Education Reform. And you were with Friendship Public Charter Schools, one of our favorite charter school networks in the whole country. Tell me your name and what you do.
Yeah, my name is Shakira Hemphill. I am the Director of Talent.
Fantastic, which means you have to attract really good people to help educate your students.
To help push our mission of Friendship Public Charter School. And I actually started at Friendship as a teacher in 2004. And so it's been a great experience, and being able to really now bring the best to our best is really important.
And why is there a difference? I mean, how, or well, let me repeat that. Mm-hmm. What is the difference for you in terms of having been first a teacher in the classroom, now recruiting talent? What does Friendship do differently than a lot of schools?
Yeah, so I believe that at Friendship, we really create a community of learners. And so we do that not just for our scholars, but also for our teachers. And so the aha effect, or the things that really make us different, is we are going out into the community. We're going and being participatory in meetings, and we're meeting people in the community so that we're not just a school. So we can have that direct impact, and then we can also attract those who live in the community to be a part of the work that we're doing in the buildings that we are actually overseeing or in within the wards that we're in.
And how does school choice help you get your job accomplished every day?
Yeah, so it gives us a chance for parents to know that they have an option. I think when we, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I was a product of D.C. public schools, but when I decided to come to Friendship, I knew that it would give me an opportunity to let parents as well as families that know that you can make a decision and you can provide a high-quality education, and students do not have to be boxed in. They are not in a place where you have to mandate that they have a specific education. Or I believe what we do at Friendship, it's out of the box. We are really focused on STEM education, early college. We're pushing our students to and through college, and we follow them. I have seen students come back that are actually working for us now who were a part of our first graduating class. And so to be able to say that you educated this student and now they're coming back and they're providing the same for the students of the future, that speaks volumes.
That's fantastic. And being a charter school allows you that flexibility also to make those
decisions and to be able to have the different policies in place that you know will be beneficial for your scholars, not about what's beneficial for policy or beneficial for someone else at a central office making a decision. All of our decisions are student-centered, and they are about the mission of what we're doing at Friendship Public Charter School.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
I'm speaking to scholars from Friendship Public Charter School. What's the name of your school?
Tech Prep. Tech Prep.
Tech Prep. Okay, and what's your name?
Albany.
And
Michaela.
Kayla.
Sean.
Okay, Sean, Albany, and Michaela, why do you like your school?
Because unlike other schools, like, we actually, like everybody got their own, like, relationship. Like, we closer than, like, just school and education. Like, it's just more than that.
That's great. And did you choose, or did your parent, your mom help you choose, your family, and why?
My mom helped me choose because we felt as though Tech Prep was a great opportunity to learn. I mean, like, a great place to learn, and gave the right help needed to get on the right, you know, path to success.
That's great. And how about you? Why did you decide to go to Friendship Tech Prep?
Because my mother told me to.
Yeah, okay. And why did your mom want you to go to a charter school?
Because I had more experiences, better opportunities, and it's just because it's closer to home as well.
Great. What do you think of Tech Prep?
I think it's a good school. It offers a lot of opportunities. Like, a lot of things that I have, I wouldn't have if it wasn't for my school. So I think that's good.
That's great. What's your name?
Holiday.
Hi, Holiday. I'm Jeannie. All right. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. I'm also talking to Sylvia Sims, the Executive Director of Educational Opportunities for Families, a parent power grassroots advocacy group working to improve the quality of schools in Philadelphia.
Sylvia is one of the many voices of opportunity, voices of color out there, challenging and pushing back on traditional status quo organizations like the NAACP that want to deny African-American children and children of color the opportunity to get out of the zip code to which they're assigned. Sylvia Sims, you have been such a strong advocate for charter schools and choices of all kinds in Philadelphia. You've been working to improve schools in the city for so long. You were a member of the prestigious School Reform Commission, which requires a very high-level appointment. You now direct the Educational Opportunities for Families. You've been the head of Parent Power, which your wonderful sister, Divine, has now runs. Tell me something. And as African-American mother working two jobs in North Philadelphia who has set her mission is to provide a safe upbringing for your children that includes access to a higher quality of education, how do parents on a day-to-day basis in Philadelphia help us understand how do they feel about what's happening with their schools?
Well, most of the families that I've talked to, they really are frustrated. They're hurt. They are annoyed, and most of them really want to fight, but they just don't know how to fight because of the big bureaucracy of the system.
And what does that bureaucracy look like? I mean, is it because people don't care? Is there just like nobody knows what to do?
No, I wouldn't say it's people that don't care. I think it's people just don't have the balls to stand up and do what's right. I think sometimes it's easier to go with the status quo than to really make changes because somebody is going to get hurt. But somebody is getting hurt now, and right now it's our children.
You know, you wrote this wonderful piece for the Philadelphia Inquirer about how these very families you're talking about, Sylvia, many of these families, particularly of color and low-income families, face some formidable opposition. I mean, they have one of the groups that created itself to support and advance the work and the mission of colored people, as in the mission, NAACP, which you say is supposed to ensure political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights for all persons, is actually fighting parents. Do parents know this?
I think for my families, a lot of them just don't know what they don't know because they're just trying to get by day to day, just doing what they think is right for their families. Because remember, we have failed generations of families, maybe like four generations.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times, the families just don't know what they don't know. So they don't know the politics of a lot of stuff that is going on. So because they don't know the politics, a lot of people who do are just playing on the backs of the families.
Right. And they're distrustful because so many times they feel disappointed. You know, the other thing, you know, you and I have talked about, because for those people listening to this podcast, and thank you again for being on it, but this is the Reality Check. If you're just tuning in, Sylvia, people like you are rare, but in lots of cities, there's a Sylvia Sims who is connecting with real people and bringing their message to policymakers. It's advocacy, and it's also you're teaching them what they should be able to ask for and demand. Is this notion of educational opportunity something that, have you found that it really resonates with local families once they understand it?
Well, I think there's a two-prong. The families that have their children in great charter schools, they already learn how to maneuver and navigate the system.
Mm-hmm.
What I see is it's the families that are on wait lists and want better for their children but just haven't had the opportunity or the choice to do it. So for me, it's those families that we have to tap in, and it's also the families that have their children in failing, struggling schools, that we have to wake up and start holding folks more accountable to educate children.
And who's on the who's on the other side besides some of these groups at the national level, locally? What's happening with, for example, you know, you've got fewer than 10% of your kids in some cases are even learning to, or reading at basic level. You've got low graduation mm-hmm. rates. Who could oppose giving them a choice to do that? Beyond, we talked about the NAACP, right? They're trying to, you know, as Johnny Taylor from the Thurgood Marshall College Fund puts it, they're being political. They're trying to do what the union wants mm-hmm. them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Are people locally really that naive that they don't understand it's time to help us all help you break out?
Well, I think there are a lot of people that are naive, but you have to educate, empower, and engage them. And I think once we do that, then the force will change, you know, and then once we do that, we have to start banding together. We have to have people from all across the United States start a movement. And the thing for me is this is going to be a grassroots movement, because the other folks that want the status quo, either their children are in great schools or they have learned how to navigate the system to make it work for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize that there's a lot of other people who they have left behind. And what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I mean, you can't say we're going to fight for quality education for my child, but not fight for quality education for all children.
Well, let's hear it for principals who write people like you up and make you mad enough to go out and do something on your own. Sylvia Sims, parent advocate extraordinaire, thank you for being my guest on Reality Check. I look forward to watching, waiting, and working with you along your path.
Tell me about why you're here, who you are, what you do, and why this is important.
Well, I'm Colleen Cook, and I'm a national board member with publicschooloptions.org, and I'm here today as the parent voice and a parent representative for school choice. We're here because we support the parent voice in making decisions for their children's education, and this is just a great event and a great way to bring our voices out and to support school choice all across the country. We have thousands of parents in our network. We have chapters in over 30 states made up of parent volunteers who advocate for choices in their states and all across the country.
What do you find is your biggest challenge in helping parents with obtaining and supporting their opportunities to choose?
Our biggest challenge is just educating those who make the decisions for us on what school choice really is and why the parent voice is important to be heard.
Do you think that there's any one kind of choice that's better than another? And what's wrong with just traditional public schools?
I firmly believe that the only right choice for a child is the choice that fits that child best.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Colleen, so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
What can we all do out there to make this happen?
Raise your voices with people who can make a difference. Every person can make a difference in their own way. There are some that have power to cast votes. There are others that have power to change policy. We need all of them to join and unite behind changing education fundamentally for all kids.
Amen. Thank you, Secretary.
Reality Check is a weekly podcast produced by National Review and posted on Monday at nationalreview.com. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free and make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more about education reform, opportunity, and innovation at the Center for Education Reform's website, edreform.com. Don't forget, tune in to Reality Check every week.